The Truth News Network. Maybe the scariest thing there is today is truth in media, especially the news. Get not only the news, but the truth in the news and nothing else. From TNN, the Truth News Network. Without the other guy's spin, here's your host, Dan Newman.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to TNN, the Truth News Network. Big story here today. We talked about it over the last couple of days and told you it was on its way. It is here. And since we first mentioned we were going to carry this story, it's even gotten worse. The pictures of war in America. War is here, folks. And it's not just in Syria and Iraq. It is alive and it is thriving in the United States of America. On June 30th of this year, 2018, Joey Gibson led Patriot Prayer through the streets of Portland on their Freedom and Courage March. So see for yourself. If you're listening to the podcast, you won't be able to see and hear what we're talking about. I suggest you pause the podcast, go to the front page of the website at www.truthnewsnet.org and watch that video right now. It'll blow your mind. It's hard to believe that what we see in videos almost daily is actually a war of the worst kind. It's a war of the worst kind because it's here on American shores and between fellow Americans. You know, war is not new to the world and it's not near to the United States. It certainly is not new here. But it has been more than a century since a war that involved America and Americans actually took place on American soil. The Civil War from 1861 to 1865 was the last war to invade our borders. And that one was pretty significant in losses. 600,000 Americans gave their lives fighting about slavery. It changed our nation forever, not just in putting the injustices of slavery at the top of the news for generations, but for many of those who gave their lives, it meant their heritage through children and grandchildren. And their grandchildren would never be achieved or experienced because it was cut short by an American war on American soil. It also meant that they died at the hands of other Americans. That was and still is very hard to reconcile. We may be watching that reoccur in America today.
The people are going to turn on them, they're going to protest, they're going to absolutely harass them until they decide that they're going to tell the president, no, I can't hang with you.
Not in D.C., not in the U.S., not in D.C., not in the U.S., not in D.C., not in the U.S.
Our issue is strong borders, no crime. Their issue is open borders. Let MS-13 all over our country. That's what's going to happen if you listen to them.
It's one thing to peacefully protest. Our nation was built on that tenet of democracy. But when does peaceful stop and confrontation begin? We forgot about the riots in Baltimore in which police were physically assaulted. There were multiple injuries of rioters and police. And on the front page of the website at this particular point, pause this podcast and go look at the video news report of a segment, just a short segment, of the violence that was filmed by a news reporter in Baltimore. It seems that the horrors that play out on the streets are important only when the media need a juicy story. And when the need for those headlines and gory video fades away, so does the reporting. The news is only important when a tragedy with death and destruction and/or police brutality or alleged police brutality, or important for the appropriate headline, or it could simply be turning an otherwise benign White House Oval Office meeting into a weaponized call to arms.
Kanye West in the Oval Office today, unfiltered and unapologetic.
Trump is on his hero's journey right now, and he might not have expected to have a crazy like Kanye West.
For more than 10 minutes, the controversial rapper delivering a frenetic, at times jarring, monologue.
It was something about when I put this hat on, it made me feel like Superman.
West repeatedly slapping the historic Resolute desk.
Manufacturing.
Freestyling by our count on more than 40 topics.
What I think is, we don't need sentences, we need pardons. It's a hydrogen-powered airplane, and this is what our president should be flying in. Look at this jerk. If he don't look good, we don't look good. This is our president.
It's true.
So when I said I like Trump to like someone that's liberal, they'll say, oh, but he's racist. You think racism can control me? Oh, that don't stop me. That's an invisible wall. You are tasting a fine wine. It has multiple notes to it.
The provocative performance nearly leaving even the president speechless.
That was quite something. That was quite something.
It was from the soul.
West sharing that he was diagnosed with bipolar disorder before getting a second opinion.
He said that I actually wasn't bipolar. I had sleep deprivation, which could cause dementia.
A presidential invitation intended to focus on social issues with a superstar ambassador. The surreal scene, a mutual admiration society.
Here, let me give this guy a hug right here. I love this guy right here.
Peter Alexander, NBC News, the White House.
That was NBC's recount of rapper Kanye West meeting with President Trump in the Oval Office. While NBC did not attack Kanye, they certainly in this story took jabs at his 40 different topics that NBC reported he brought up while speaking to the president, pointing to the fact that a doctor diagnosed Kanye as bipolar. But media attacks against Americans like Kanye West are rampant, and they're not news stories. As an example, CNN pundit Don Lemon used rap star Kanye's dead mother to attack him for his political views, saying that if his mother were still alive, she would be embarrassed by his White House visit with President Trump. Lemon, who has been a constant critic of the president, took umbrage at West's appearance in the Oval Office as a news music licensing law was signed. You didn't hear NBC mention that at all, did you? Quote by Lemon, I have no animosity for Kanye West, he said on CNN. He continued, I'm just going to be honest, and I may get in a lot of trouble for it. I actually feel bad for him. What I saw was a minstrel show today. Him in front of all these white people, mostly white people, embarrassing himself and embarrassing Americans, but mostly African Americans, because every one of them is sitting either at home with their phones watching this, cringing. Kanye needs help. This has nothing to do with being liberal or a conservative. We have to stop pretending like this is normal, Lemon said. CNN actually hosted a panel about Kanye's meeting with the president, in which one political pundit called Kanye President Trump's token Negro. And the African-American community, them's fighting words. Wait a minute. The pundit who called Kanye Trump's token Negro was a black person. Okay, we've taken the easy way to open this conversation about war. We got to get to the nitty-gritty. What is war? Now, follow this line of reasoning with me. Cicero defines war broadly as a contention by force. Hugo Grotius adds that war is the state of contending parties. Thomas Hobbes notes that war is also an attitude, quote, by war is meant a state of affairs which may exist even while its operations are not continued. Dennis Dierdart comments that war is a convulsive and violent disease of the body of politics. For Karl von Clausewitz, war is the continuation of politics by other means, and so on. Each definition has its strengths and weaknesses, but often is the culmination of the writer's broader philosophical positions. For example, The notion that wars only involve states, as Clausewitz implies, references a strong political theory that assumes politics can only involve states and that war is in some manner or form a reflection of political activity. War, defined by Webster's dictionary, is a state of open and declared hostile armed conflict between states or nations, or a period of such conflict. This maintains that war needs to be explicitly declared and to be between states to be a war. Rousseau argues this position. War is constituted by a relation between things and not between persons. War, then, is a relation, not between man and man, but between state and state. And that came from The Social Contract. So when does confrontation become war? You know, that's a good question. And it does not become war with an easy answer. But answer it, we must. Comparing what we're watching today to other times of conflict on U.S. soil may be unreasonable to some. After all, we did have the National Guard gun down rioters at Kent State during the Vietnam conflict. Those were protesters. Barack Obama's mentor, William Ayers, with his girlfriend, Bernadette Dorn, of the terrorist group Weather Underground, did bomb a police station, and a policeman was killed in that bombing. Is it safe for us to allege we're facing something similar today? Let's think that through together. Congressman Steve Scalise, Republican from Louisiana, was gunned down at a baseball practice of GOP House members in Washington by a nut job who was actually there, and he said he was there to do just that, kill Republican members of Congress. Rioters in Portland, and again in Berkeley, and again in Baltimore, have on several occasions razed businesses, injured private citizens during riots, attacked others, have injured policemen, all in the name of anti-fascism, when in fact, Antifa, these anti-fascists, are actually the fascists they say they are fighting against. The Baltimore riots shown above morphed into violence as well as that. It resulted in personal injuries and immense damage to personal property. When will it be appropriate to call what we are seeing as war? One might say that watching leftist politicians instruct their political adherents to get in the faces of administration employees and tell them they're not welcome here, or to drive them out of restaurants and gas stations, or to stand next to their tables in restaurants threatening them, is all simply peaceful and legal political demonstrating. But isn't all of the above, when put in total, a type of inciting to riot? Inciting to riot is against the law. But wait a minute. Against the law? Saying that some of these actions are against the law is a joke today. We don't enforce laws, or quite a few of them. Rahm Emanuel, mayor of Chicago, is watching as every weekend dozens of Chicagoans are slaughtered on his city streets. That's not just recent. It's been happening in Chicago for several years. Yet Rahm simply allows it to continue. He even restricts Chicago police, preventing them from taking necessary measures to stop the killings. Isn't that anarchy? Well, let's define anarchy. Anarchy is the absence of any cohesive principle, such as a common standard or purpose. I totally agree with those that say Chicago is stricken with the absence of any cohesive principle, such as a common standard or purpose. A mayor of a city should always keep and maintain a common standard and purpose. If nothing else, just assuring the safety of his city's residents is all the justification that's needed for that. What scares me for my grandchildren is the ever-growing benign acceptance of American leaders of this anarchy, this rioting, this terrorization of American citizens. It goes virtually unchecked by leaders. What about what's going on in Portland? The Portland mayor told his cops not to interfere with the terrorist activity that in the riots that were going on. Maybe they allow it with some unimaginable hope of it will get so bad it will force Americans to make political changes that they want made. Barack Obama himself made it clear he wanted to lead in the fundamental change of America. Boy, America is fundamentally changing, that's for sure. But these changes are not for the better. When political leaders stand in front of voters and their constituents and instruct those listening to aggressively confront those with whom they hold political differences, are those leaders so blind as to think numbering among all who listen are not a few who take those cries literally? Maxine Waters did not only cry with a bullhorn for voters to aggressively confront Trump administration members on the street, in restaurants, and even in gas stations. She has since doubled and tripled down on those instructions, laughing about it. Over a year ago on this blog site, I told all who looked in what the difference between liberals and conservatives is. I'll repeat it here today for all of you. Conservatives don't like what liberals stand for. Liberals hate conservatives. I'll repeat it. Conservatives don't like what liberals stand for. Liberals hate conservatives. Hatred goes a long way toward inciting anger and violence. Violence goes a long way toward the incitement of terror, bombing, and physical assault. Terror, bombings, and physical assault are nothing more than a precursor to war. I'm not trying to scare anybody here, but on the eve of the midterm elections, we must be mindful of who we vote for. Whoever wins these elections will collectively be in positions of leading America into the ratcheting down of this angry rhetoric that is inciting violence, or ratcheting it up. If we're not watchful, if we do not vote and vote our hearts, if we allow the leaders of these violent leftists to assume or maintain leadership, we will inevitably slide into war again on American soil. We are not far from that today. Folks, thank you so much for listening in today. We thank you for joining us every day. We don't take you for granted. This is your website. Love to hear from you, your thoughts. Send us an email and tell us what you think. Just comment below by clicking in the comment section on the homepage. We'll be back tomorrow. We're going to keep this truck just going down the road. And we're glad you joined in at truthnewsnet.org. So long, everybody.
We don't tell you what to think,
but we give you truth to think about. This is TNN, the Truth News Network.
truthnewsnet.org.